Our next presenter is Dr. Stephen Modell. Stephen Modell is the Dissemination Activities Director, Genetics Policy in the Department of Health Management and Policy, University of Michigan, School of Public Health. He was the Chief Evaluation Specialist for the NIH-funded Midwest Community Genomics Forum and recently Geno Community Think Tank First National Meeting, and served as the information synthesizer for the NSF-funded Research Community on Genetics and Racial Ethnic Identities Seminar Series. Having compiled a 117-page report for that project, Dr. Modell's publications have covered a number of technical familial history of coronary heart disease with chironcardia, long QT syndrome, and socio-ethnical recently community dialogue and newborn screening with Toby Sidring. He co-teaches the Issues in Public Health Genetics course at the University of Michigan. This course looks at genetics from multiple perspectives and motivates students to seek policy solutions for the issues they are examining. Dr. Modell's personal interests include the philosophical and cultural religious implications of genetic research. So, Steve.
Thank you, Nelson. This certainly teaches me to keep any biographical information short in the future. Thanks, everybody, for coming here on this Bulwarker Day of the APHA meeting, and for those who came but still don't have a seat. So this talk is about a policy statement answering needs and deficits, the 2013 APHA Cancer Genomics and Public Health Policy Statement. And I'm here to talk about it on behalf of my co-organizer, Chikezi Maduka and Isha Matthew. And we have no disclosures. This policy statement was actually 2 years in the making, and then it was submitted to APHA in February of last year. And it was passed by the Governing Council shortly after presentation last year at APHA. And it was written by a collaborative effort by the APHA Genomics Forum Policy Committee. Basically, it formed as a result of the meetings that we had every month where people pooled ideas. Very important gathering of thoughts and suggestions. The goal was to consolidate evidence-based assessments of genetic screening and testing relevant to public health, with special attention to their socioethical aspects and the impact on diverse groups. There was precedent for this kind of statement coming out within those statements released previously by APHA. One came out in 2001 on emerging genetic tests, and I believe that Toby Sitrin there was a collaborator on that. And there was one that came out in 2005 on colorectal screening, but it really didn't touch on genetics issues. There's also been momentum building for this sort of thing externally. So the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force released its evidence-based recommendations on BRCA genetic testing in 2006, referring women with increased risk based on family history for genetic counseling and potential test evaluation. Also meant momentum from within public health. For example, Michigan and Oregon have incorporated incidence data for heritable cancers into their cancer disease registries. And Healthy People 2020 combined the USPSTF recommendations together with those of EGAP, the Evaluation for Genomic Applications and Practice and Prevention Working Group findings. USPSTF dealing with BRCA and breast cancer, and the EGAP recommendations having to do with Lynch syndrome. Now, we had to make a decision about the nature, the contour of the policy statement. Our committee had previously produced a piece on genomic literacy, and that was one topic, taking a look at that comprehensively. We decided to expand or mushroom out a little bit this time and look at a variety of topics that fell underneath cancer genetics. So here's a list of topics, and they go all the way from the bread and butter that we deal with in public health, like cancer surveillance and family health history, to disparities in education. The preferred format for these policy statements is not to just to present the issues and the facts, but also to have a little bit of the pluses and minuses. And we did that for each one of our topical areas. So if we look at the bottom here and we're considering colorectal cancer, then the cost effectiveness of both preliminary screening and the cancer genetic testing itself has been demonstrated. But on the other hand, you have to think about the translation of the technology. So there have been inconsistencies in the applicational guidelines that still exist, and that sort of thing went into the point-counterpoint in the policy statement. Let's take a look at genetic testing. We have been discussing with Nicole the best way to present this, and we thought it would be sort of dividing what we said between diagnostic testing of those who are suspected of having a cancer and predictive testing, for example, of at-risk relatives. So for preliminary screening for individuals who are suspected of having a cancer, a technique such as immunohistologic markers could be used. And these will triage patients into risk groups and help to decide whether they should go on to the slightly more expensive genetic testing. Now, genetic testing test kits for breast cancer are available on the market these days, for example, MammaPrint and Oncotype DX, and those can be used. Then the guidelines are useful in judging, based on the existence of a proband and a variety of other factors, whether relatives should undergo predictive genetic testing. What we find is good agreement between some of the guidelines that exist, for example, the USPSTF and the National Comprehensive Cancer Network guidelines, and weaker agreement with others. It's the updated New York Academy of Sciences, American College of Medical Genetics and Genomics guidelines. And the CDC found when it was looking at individuals experiencing the result of the USPSTF guidelines their physicians had a little bit of difficulty in interpreting those who are at increased risk from family history. So that's what I'd like to go to next, is the issue of family history. As we researched, we found that family history usage for cancer, and it depends upon the cancer, displays a wide sensitivity range, depending upon the cancer type. Nevertheless, if we're focusing on breast and colorectal cancer, family health history has been shown to have greater clinical accuracy than direct-to-consumer personalized genomic testing, which is rewarding because we very much advocate the use of family health history here in public health. Now, there have been slightly more sophisticated instruments that go beyond simply a pedigree and also take a look at lifestyle, and these have been developed by a variety of public health sources. And so these instruments and the investigators behind them are in the process of developing practical guidelines to definitively identify those at elevated risk. Good thing about family history is that it can be used as the starting point for genetic testing within families, something that we call cascade screening, which is a cascade type of screening among family members. And as a matter of fact, usage of cascade screening has been found to yield upwards of 20 additional tests that have been accepted by family members and applied per family. Now, we did include in the policy statement various advanced technologies like gene expression profiling, as well as advanced forms of research such as GWAS. And this is up on e-learning, so I think in the interest of time, I'm going to skip this slide, except to say that they do have their definite place in terms of oncogenomic public health. Direct-to-consumer genetic testing was one of the first items that we got to, and the amount of ink that we put on paper grew and grew, and eventually we decided we had to stop it and get on to the other topics. The Myriad ads, of course, came out very early. These were for BRCA analysis. And research has shown that these ads did lead to greater awareness in consumers of the existence of genetic testing. But at the same time, the ads were far short of being able to increase consumer knowledge or consumer ability to understand the kind of tests they were having and ultimately to interpret their results. The U.S. Government Accounting Office also has found variability in the reporting between different families for different types of, between different companies for reporting of different types of cancer conditions. Now, concerns with DTC genetic testing, concerns over safety, tend to fall into two camps. Those concerns dealing with the validity of the test. Is it possibly being offered commercially prematurely? And this applies to a lot of SNP assessments, which in polymorphisms tend to have a slightly weaker genetic effect. That's one concern. The other one is the effects of the advertising, that they skip some items of public health interest, such as lifestyle factors, especially important if you're talking about risk for cancer, and that they glaze over or oversimplify other areas, such as who is susceptible and at risk for genetic conditions, can be stigmatizing. Cancer genomics education was an important part of the policy statement. Li Shi Chen et al., and Li Shi is a part of the Genomics Forum, had a study demonstrating that only half of public health educators felt it's important to integrate genomics into community-based education programs. Now, there are a variety of reasons behind this, and one of them, which is shared by both medical and public health practitioners, is that they invest their trust in interventions which have shown evidence of health benefit. And it's also very important for them to have access to this evidence-based information, which is one part of education and what public health practitioners in the know can contribute. On the one hand, you've got education of professionals, and that can be a little bit on the technical side. On the other hand, you have it for community members, and that, by and large, should be the opposite. It should be simple and palatable for individuals. In the South Dallas study here, it looked at people, half of whom were below the poverty line. And when asked, they said that the use of lay health educators, as well as community informational sessions, was extremely valuable to them. And it was found that this dual effort increased mammogram screening rates by tenfold. Now, since we're in Louisiana, I thought I'd have to throw in this line here about the clear ability of Louisiana to see what's important. And these people felt it was important to prioritize reduction of the technical detail in the information they were receiving, and also to personalize the information so that it related to the conditions that they were experiencing as well as their family members. Things like electronic media to educate consumers, those naturally had a mixed result depending upon who the consumer was and how computer literate they were. Direction. We had significant sections on disparities as well as cost and availability. This one study, Harvard Massachusetts General Hospital, found that whites were twice as likely to receive BRCA testing and colorectal cancer mutation testing than African Americans. There was also a lot of lopsidedness in the genetic databases that are out there, whereas you might guess whites were more represented in the mutational information in these databases, so that you had in this one, the Insight database, only 2% of the registrants were of African ancestry. Trust is a very important ingredient when we're talking about usage of genetic services. Trust of simple interventions like mammography and colonoscopy depended upon the individual's outlook as to what the physician would do with the information, whether they could keep it private. And also, consumer preference matters, so that for interventions like fetal occult blood testing and fecal DNA testing, these tend to be a little bit more appreciated in minorities as well as the general population than more run-of-the-mill interventions like colonoscopy. We talked about cost and availability. Despite the reduced access fact that I cited to you, it was found that more than 80% of African Americans would take a predictive test for breast, ovarian, or colorectal cancer if it were made available to them. Now, interestingly, individuals who are from Appalachia actually showed an increased receptiveness towards genetic testing because they also had an awareness of the prevalence of hereditary cancer as well as mortality from it within their families. The next line here shows the raw cost of genetic testing. So BRCA testing has been known to be very expensive because of the myriad monopoly, $3,000. However, once an individual within the family has their mutation has been identified, the cost can go down to $650 for other family members. For Lynch syndrome, the cost is actually $1,000 per mutation assessed. And once again, the cost can go down to $350. These, of course, are much more expensive than mammography, which is $150, say, on the average. But if an individual is suspected of harboring a tumor because of mammography, they might receive follow-up mammography and a sonogram, which would cost $1,000. And colonoscopy can run between $800 and $1,200. So it really is a judgment call when you take a look at the series of what an individual undergoes as to whether genetic testing is outright more expensive or not. Fortunately, Medicaid does support BRCA predictive testing in 32 states. This was a pre-Affordable Care Act finding, so the list has probably grown. And here we go with our recommendations, which basically fell into four baskets. The first basket was informational, that health departments with the support of federal health agencies and health advocacy organizations should incorporate data for heritable cancer conditions and related service utilization into statewide surveillance efforts through cancer disease registries and electronic health record systems. The second basket was intervention-related, that federal health agencies, national advocacy organizations, and genetic working groups should promote the use of family health history and cascade screening, especially for Tier 1 conditions. Those are conditions whose genetic information, whose genetic intervention has been fully validated. And encourage the use of cancer diagnostic and predictive genetic testing into existing public health cancer programs. And efforts should be promoted by state legislators to secure Medicaid coverage of testing and counseling. You're laughing because I'm reading from my sheet and not the screen. That was recommendations two. Recommendation three deal with disparities. Federal agencies and state health departments should further the appropriate use of oncogenomic testing in members of different racial ethnic groups by supporting research into the alleviation of institutional and cultural barriers. Recommendations four basically centered on the regulation of direct-to-consumer genetic testing. I want to talk a little bit about recent trends. I already mentioned that surveillance systems have been incorporating information on heritable cancers as well as test utilization in a number of states, their public health departments, and this is done through a variety of means, including absorption of electronic medical records. CDC has been promoting the consideration of which tests fit into the Tier 1 category that are fully validated and therefore merit widespread usage at this time versus Tier 3 categories. And it's also been promoting the use of cascade screening in Tier 1 categories. Since we finished up the policy statement, the Supreme Court has ruled on the acceptability of gene patterning, not too acceptable, and this has brought the cost of BRCA testing down to $800 for some companies. I should also mention the Affordable Care Act, of course, and it does cover BRCA counseling. Just in October 2014, not long ago, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services granted national coverage for Cologuard fecal DNA testing. Well, that's the policy statement in a nutshell. Here's our contact information. Does anybody have any questions? Yes, I noticed your eyebrows raising.
But
just by sheer argument, then you would have to say that the mammogram testing also leads to follow-up. They both lead to follow-up, yes. But Admittedly, mammograms by themselves are just an inexpensive procedure, and they're valued. And sometimes they're the initial procedure, and then further diagnostic is done after them. Mm-hmm. But there are families at special risk for some of these heritable conditions. You don't want to avoid conducting the genetic testing if it's indicated.
Integrating those aspects, because I think they're, generally speaking, under-emphasized, and yet gene-environment interactions are clearly driving a lot of these. So, where can those come into the rec of policies?
Thank you so much for mentioning that. In the interest of time, I had to skip the GWAS section. GWAS studies do look at an array of genes, but at the same time, they have the capability of looking at interaction and the risk and the statistics that are produced with the environment. And so you have lung cancer studies which don't only look at, genes for nicotinic receptors, but they also consider non-smokers and whether they have developed cancer and maybe they're contributors to their cancer, as well as smokers and the risk levels. Environmental considerations are important when we're looking at particular cancer categories, like bladder cancer, like lung cancer, and those fed into the GWAS section of the proposal.